Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chicago's known for pizza, and it's big business for the city. And we're going to talk all about it. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gaines. All right, we're going to take a quick break from our usual financial markets discussion and instead talk about the business of pizza in Chicago. And today we've got two guests here in studio, perfect for the discussion. All right, we're bringing on Brian Tundrick, founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizzeria with locations in Chicago's Roscoe Village and Westtown neighborhoods. And then we're also bringing on the go-to guy when it comes to Chicago pizza history, and that's Chicago pizza historian Peter Regas. Guys, great to have you on the Gaines podcast. And Brian, let's start with you. You have ties to the Chicago pizza industry that run pretty deep. Explain.
Yeah, I opened Bartoli's Pizzeria in 2013. It was more of something to do as a legacy to my grandfather, who started Gino's East Pizza in 1966. He had a couple partners that did that. And it's just something I always wanted to do. I've always been interested in deep dish pizza and Chicago style pizza in general. So that's why we opened up the restaurant in 2013.
Also joining us is one of Chicago's go-to pizza historians. Peter, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Peter Regas. I grew up in Park Ridge. I remember the pizza in the 70s and the 80s very, very well. And we never talked about it in detail. We just assumed it was always there. But I live in Chicago now, and 16 years ago, I started to get interested in the history of pizza in America, and specifically Chicago. So I've looked into the history of deep dish pizza, how pizza came to the United States, and the history of thin crust pizza, or some people call it tavern style.
You know, Chicago is known for three different styles of pizza. You got the deep dish, you have stuffed pizza, and then you just mentioned tavern style, which seems to be blowing up, you know, over the last couple years more so. Kind of break that down. I've heard, you know, we'll start with deep dish, Peter. Deep dish, where did it start in Chicago? What's the story behind that?
So the story is, you can go back into the 30s, and what was happening on the East Coast is prohibition was lifted, and pizza as a side product for tavern started to get very popular on the East Coast. That phenomena as a business product came to Chicago in the late 30s, early 40s. So if you want to look at it that way, deep dish pizza starts about December of 1943 at Pizzeria Uno. Around that same time, if not a little bit earlier, what we now call thin crust pizza or tavern style started around the same time, but they sort of came from the same phenomena, and that was in the taverns. They wanted a side product of pizza that they learned from East Coast, which at that time it was booming. So we just started a little bit after the East Coast started, and that's how deep dish began, December of 1943 at Pizzeria Uno.
Chicago is known for its pizza, more so than a lot of other cities. Why do you think Chicago's gotten that pizza just attached to the city?
Well, we were the second largest in terms of total Italian Americans, so that's a good the reason. We had an enormous amount of taverns in the 30s and the 40s. And as a phenomena, it started to grow steam during and after the war. It wasn't so much because the troops came back, which a lot of people say, but by the early 50s, it became a national phenomena and it just exploded.
And then Brian, your family, as you mentioned, your grandfather was in the business. So talk about your grandfather and what he did. And then your family then got out of the pizza business altogether. But let's talk about your grandfather and Gino's.
Yeah, that's great. My grandfather, he got out of World War II and was a taxi driver. And at one point, he started his own cab company called Red Top Cab. He partnered up with a few gentlemen, and they bought a building down on Superior in Michigan. And they were trying to figure out what to do with the building, and they had an Italian fine dining restaurant in there. And about that time, deep dish pizza was starting to become really popular in Chicago. So they decided to do deep dish pizza. And then, you know, they took off. They started Gino's East in 1966. I mean, it's 23 years after Pizzeria Uno. I don't think deep dish was really that popular before this time. But once Gino's opened up on Superior, they had lines down the block to Michigan Avenue every day to get in the restaurant.
And it's amazing how a lot of people associate with social media and everything. Oh, Chicago's a pizza city, but this goes back a long time. And there are a ton of historical pizzerias in this town. Peter, kind of pick up on that.
Well, right. So both Thin Crust and Deep Dish, we have some old for us pizzerias, which began in the 40s and of the 50s. It's sort of amusing to me because when we talk about things that are old, we're sort of assuming people were alive to remember them, but they're really not that old. The oldest pizzeria that I found in the United States was 1893, and that was in Manhattan, New York. The earliest one in Chicago was 1906. And then we just, for whatever reason, and I'm still not really sure why, Chicago didn't develop a pizza culture until the late 30s or early 40s. And then it started to slowly develop a culture.
When did it become on everybody's radar when they came to Chicago? Yeah, we got to check out pizza. You know, they always talk, hey, we got to go to Chicago, get that deep dish. And then now, more recently, like we've discussed, taverns kind of been at the forefront.
But well, I remember, right. I remember this very well from the 70s and the early 80s, at least. It was not on our radar at all because social media has changed everything dramatically. And I never had my first deep dish until the early 80s. And I had thicker crust pizza. But that phenomena really never really went viral until the early 70s, which when deep dish became huge, and then something else, which we're going to talk about, stuffed pizza also became huge right around that time. But as a differentiation, like when we talk about tavern style, well, there was no need for us to distinguish that. We just assumed that was pizza and the other one was thicker, and that was pretty much it. We were not that sophisticated to the degree that we are now, where we compare ourselves to New York or Naples or San Francisco. We just knew what we knew because that's what existed in the city. So that was it.
And the third style that's really popular in Chicago, and you kind of alluded to it, stuffed pizza. And that goes back to like the 70s? Is that kind of right? What's the deal with stuffed pizza?
Right. Stuffed is something that often gets confused with deep dish because it's very, very similar to it. It's the same pan. And it's also thick, but stuffed, it's important to distinguish, stuffed came out of the deep dish phenomenon, as Brian was saying, in the 60s, it slowly became a recognized different sort of pizza. And then by the early 70s, it starts to go viral. Stuffed came out of that same movement, but they changed it a little bit when they put a second piece of dough on top of the pizza and then had the sauce on top of that dough. So basically, what happened is everyone was sort of imitating what they thought deep dish was like, or they were slightly changing it a little bit. And what happened, I think, is they imitated it, they kept the pan, and they just made it a little bit thicker. So we had this competition, it looks like, in the early 70s, where our deep dish pizza, which we now think is thick, it was modestly thick. It was thicker than thin crust, of course, but it was not very thick. By the mid-70s, you started to get ads saying, we have a 2-inch thick pizza, as though that's something to brag about, which I don't think it probably was. But
and then, Brian, talk about where Bartoli's fits in the Chicago pizza landscape.
We wanted to be a Chicago-style pizzeria, and the two main styles in Chicago were thin crust. At that time, it's tavern's a newer term. I had never heard of it, you know, 12, 13 years ago. I'm not sure exactly. Maybe Peter can give us a little bit more information on when the term tavern came out. And then deep dish pizza. So we wanted to be a true Chicago-style pizzeria, do a cracker crust thin and a Chicago-style deep dish pizza. And there's a misconception. A lot of people are getting use the wrong terms when they want to order pizza. There's a difference between pan pizza, there's a difference between deep dish pizza, and there's a difference between stuffed pizza. So they're all made in a pan, but when you say pan pizza, it's more like a regular pizza where you have your sauce on the bottom and your cheese on the top. Deep dish pizza is the opposite, where you have your cheese on the bottom and then your ingredients and your sauce on the top, and then stuffed adds another layer of dough and sauce on top of that. So I get calls all the time, and I already know that they want the deep dish, but they'll say, I want like your pan pizza or your stuffed pizza. We just give them the deep dish.
And then, you know, we were talking about how competitive the Chicago pizza market is. How do you make a name for yourself in such a crowded field? And a lot of places that have been around forever, and, you know, Peter can talk to this, have storied histories as well. How do you, you know, really get your pizzeria to stand out from the others?
Well, you know, it's really coming down to quality of ingredients, consistency, a well-balanced pizza. All those things are really important in just, you know, setting yourself apart from your competition. It's definitely changed a lot over the last few years. It's definitely a more competitive environment out there than there was 10 years ago when I started in the business. We've got so many different style pizzas that Chicago offers now, from all the East Coast, Neapolitan. You've got Grandma style, Detroit style. There's at least 10 more styles that have come to the city, and they're all trying to make a name for themselves. But we stick to, you know, the true Chicago style tavern, our tavern crust, or you want to call it tavern crust, but thin crust, and our deep dish pizza.
And you know, restaurants, every restaurant I talk to nowadays, the two things that really come up as of late, food costs, yeah, and then labor issues, whether it's just finding employees, getting people to work at the location. How are you dealing with that right now? I mean, food costs are pretty pricey, and the labor market at times can be pretty tight.
It's a challenge for all of us. I've got a lot of friends that own pizzerias, and we're all in the same boat. And COVID definitely didn't help things. Once we got out of COVID, the whole environment really changed, to be honest. The eating patterns changed. Food costs went, you know, through the roof. Labor costs are, you know, 50% higher than they were a few years ago. And you just can't pass on all those increases to your customers. So you're eating a little bit of that, you know, trying to eat as little as possible. The other thing, too, is the third parties. We didn't talk about that at all. The third party apps like Grubhub and Uber Eats and all those, these have really, really hurt the restaurants. People don't realize that it's a convenience for them when they go on the third party apps and they're going to, you know, they just hit a button and they order, but they don't realize that that takes 20 to 25% of the profit away for, or the, of the order to the, that the, it gets passed along to the pizzeria. So our margins are much smaller now than they were when we first opened. So you have to do, we have to be as efficient as possible. We definitely haven't changed it or lack, you know, changed any of the quality of our ingredients or anything else. And, we're just doing, you know, you do the best you can.
And then, Peter, you mentioned that social media has really upped the presence of, you know, Chicago's pizza scene nationally, worldwide. How did that play out?
Well, for me personally, it played out in the mid-2000s where I liked pizza a lot, but I had no idea of something like a pizza culture or the comparison between Chicago and New York or Connecticut or San Francisco. It just wasn't on the radar until around the mid-2000s where you started to get people who were really intrigued by making it, and some owners of the pizzerias, and the sharing of photographs makes things now, especially with Instagram, a lot more visual, which is good and bad. I think the sophistication of the pizza makers has definitely gone to a higher level. On the other hand, making things visually more appealing is always not the best way to make a good food product, I think.
Yeah. And then you talking about social media, influencers, the first thing that comes to mind is the doggy window. And things have just blown up with that. So explain, Brian, about the doggy window and how that came to be. And there's a social media aspect to that as well.
Social media has definitely played a big part in all restaurants, I would say, in Chicago, all different types of cuisine. But we added a window in for COVID when we opened the Westtown store. We actually opened up a week before the city shut down because of COVID. And it was intended to be a walk-up window for customers that didn't want to come in the restaurant. We could hand food through the door. And it still is used for that. But it actually turned into a kind of a dog window. We're dog people. We've always had a dog bowl outside and had treats. And every day the dogs in the neighborhood would drag their owners by Bartoli's to get their treats. So it kind of went viral. We've had a few dogs that have come up, and my manager, she videos the dogs, and we've had some of them had millions of hits. So it's been a lot of fun.
Was it like TikTok and it was that?
Yeah,
what was they, the,
she did it on
Facebook
TikTok originally, and then Instagram, and then my social media people started posting it on the website, on our website and Instagram and stuff. So yeah, it's just we've had several videos go viral, which is crazy to me, because I never expected that at all. And we get so many dogs coming by the window every day. It's amazing.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Brian and Peter. But hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If that's an option for you, I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesdays. We'll be right back after the break. All right, we're back talking about the business of Chicago pizza with Brian Tondrake, founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizza in Chicago's Roscoe Village and Westtown neighborhoods, and also joining us, Chicago pizza historian Peter Regas. So Brian and Peter, now the social media influencers, you know, Peter, you kind of mentioned this, can cut both ways because they can also annoy people in restaurants. It can be too much, but at the same time, they're driving businesses to the restaurants that they cover. Just thoughts on that.
Right. So I mainly deal with the history, but even the history of pizza can be very controversial in subtle ways. I just did an article last year for Chicago Magazine on the history of deep dish pizza. And I had a few lines in there that I thought were totally innocuous, but I had some people who were pretty high up owners complaining about the way I phrase things, and they weren't derogatory any sort of way, but there's a very sensitive nature to exactly how you describe their product. And if it slightly varies, it's going to set some people off. I just think the stakes have been raised such that sort of the democracy of who can comment on anything is just gone totally wide now. So I mean, in part, it's a good thing, and in part, it's a bad thing. I can definitely understand if I was an owner how that can be extremely frustrating because you don't know who this guy is who's making some random comment on the net. And it can really hurt you if, for whatever reason, someone gets set off and can cause a real noticeable harm to you.
Well, how about Portnoy and Barstool Sports? Has he... gone to Bartoli's yet?
He hasn't come to Bartoli's yet, although a lot of his guys that work for him eat my pizza every day. So we're still waiting for Dave to come in to the restaurant, and that's a good point. Guys like Dave Portnoy, they've literally exploded in the pizza scene where he goes around all over the country and reviews different pizzerias. And he's been in Chicago quite a bit over the last few years because of his bar that he opened up. And if he gives you a good review, you generally blow up pretty quick. So there's a lot of influence from guys like Dave Portnoy. There's other influencers that have millions of followers, and if they like your food, you're gonna get a lot of new business from that. So it's definitely has an impact.
Well, you certainly benefited from the doggy window, I'm sure, but is there a downside for you that you see as well?
From the dog window or in
particular? No, I meant just from
media.
Influencers and social media altogether.
I don't know that if it's a downside. I think it's just part of what it is today, and we have to accept it, whether we like it or not. And hopefully, you'll get good reviews. If you have a good product, you most likely will. And we welcome it. To be honest, we've had a lot of influencers come in and do reviews on our restaurant and posted videos, and they've all been good. So that's a good thing. We're all for it.
And then, Peter, talking about Chicago pizzerias and the history of it, is there a forgotten pizzeria that you have a story about? Or, you know, if there's a place that's closed that you wish you could get a slice from?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, the first one in 1906 was on Polk and South Des Plaines. That existed for a few years. He moved around a bunch and then went back to Italy. So I would love to have a slice of that. He compared it to the same pizza that was in Napoli. So that gives you some indication as to what type of the pizza was before. It probably would have been very similar to the pizza now served in New York City. Granados used to be on Taylor right west of Halstead. I would have loved to have a pizza from Granados. Another thing I would have absolutely loved to have is that in the 30s and the 40s, and even probably before, there used to be peddlers on the near the west side who used to sell pizza from the top of their head in big tubs. So I would have loved to have seen who the peddlers actually were.
Were they like on the street peddlers?
They were street peddlers, yes.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah, I moved to Chicago in 95. So back then it was Uno's and pizza was a thing in Chicago. And I was with like Brian. I heard thin crust. I never even heard of tavern style. But how has things progressed over the last, say, 20, 25 years?
Okay, so if you start in the mid-2000s, Spaccanapoli with a wood-fired pizza that's very Neapolitan, that was the first real one in Chicago that started that trend. You had the trend of, well, briefly it was Roman style, but we didn't really get that trend. But tavern style, recently there was a major New York Times article within the last few years about tavern style. That's the latest trend now. And I'm just waiting for Deep Dish to come back too, because during the early 70s, it was just insanely popular, which was both good and bad. And so these trends usually last about 2 or 3 years, I think. And right now we're still in the thin crust trend.
And then, Peter, what's the most controversial pizza opinion you have?
Most controversial.
Yeah, something that may even, spur a heated debate among Chicagoans.
Well, there's so many to choose from. I mean, the most controversial take that I have is that I think the original deep dish crust was probably the best. And I also think the proportion of the ingredients on a thin crust pizza, I think in Chicago, they have too much cheese on their thin crust. I think the old school way of doing it in the 40s and the 50s was light hand on the cheese and very thin.
Interesting. And then Brian, you got any controversial takes on the industry?
Yeah, there's a few things. Deep dish pizza is, you get a lot, you're on all these social media sites that talk about pizza in Chicago, and they always say that Chicago style pizza is thin crust pizza. Well, it's deep dish as well. It's been around as long as thin really has in the city. And we sell a lot of it. It's not just us. You got, Lou Malnati's and whatnot. And it's not just touristy pizza. We do sell, obviously, more thin crust pizza than we do deep dish. Deep dish is more of an occasion, where thin crust is more of a daily pizza. The new trend these days, and this is something new, and guys like Dave Portnoy have kind of accelerated it, is this super thin crust, and they're calling it tavern pizza, cracker crust pizza. Generally, the pizzas don't go over 14 inches in the places that serve this, and we are going to start doing it as well. Our thin crust is already very thin, but it's a lighter cheese, light sauce, and generally one or two ingredients, and it's super thin cracker crust. You can pick it up; it doesn't fold, it doesn't flop. It's the only way to do that. So that's the new trend right now. You're hearing a lot about but for the people that order for parties and things like that, they're not going to go away from the traditional thin crust pizza with a little bit heavier cheese, heavier ingredients. This is more for, it's more for an occasion, I would guess. It's not going to feed a lot of people, to be honest, but it's really good. I love cracker crust thin. That's always been our thing.
And then Brian, also, what are the biggest challenges facing the independent pizzerias versus your bigger chains that you see throughout Chicago?
Well, I think we're able to probably provide a higher quality product than the chains do. And we're very consistent. And that's the key to our success, is being consistent, have the right proportions, high quality ingredients. And then our supporters in our neighborhood and the people in the neighborhood support us. And where chains are buying, whatever's going to be cheapest, commercial, they're not generally using maybe the highest quality ingredients, where we do that.
And is there what's the biggest myth about Chicago pizza that people outside the city always seem to get wrong?
Myth. Okay. Well, we've kind of talked about it a little bit. I mean, I think they're that most people outside the city think of us as just being a deep dish town. We're a two pizza town. We're a thin crust and a deep dish pizza town. So we sell a lot of both, and all the neighborhood pizzerias do as well. So that's kind of probably more of the myth than anything else.
Well, and Brian, as we wrap up the Gaines podcast, what's your takeaway from our conversation today and just being knee deep in this business?
I enjoyed being here today talking about Chicago style pizza. Peter's always a wealth of knowledge. I've spoken with him in the past about things. I've learned a lot from him. He knows a lot, probably more than maybe I even do about what my grandfather even did with his, where the recipes came from and whatnot. I've only heard what, you know, through my grandfather, you know, how the recipes were developed, but Peter's really researched that. So it's a lot of fun to listen to him on who invented deep dish pizza. I think that's one thing you might want to ask him is, you know, who does he think invented the deep dish pizza?
Well, and Peter kind of pick up on that.
Sure. Rick Ricardo is the guy who I'm claiming gave birth or created the original deep dish pizza at Pizzeria Uno. But from that original recipe, it changed considerably throughout the years. So there was an African-American cook that he had in the late 40s who almost certainly changed the crust to putting more fat in the crust in the terms of more oil in the crust. And then sometime in the late 50s, early 60s, it started to get thicker and thicker. And then you had this phenomenon in the 70s where they started to copy everyone and they thought that to copy means make it thicker because thicker is always better, which is not true. But anyway, so that's the brief. The history was started by a man named Rick Ricardo, who's famous in the 30s and the 40s in Chicago. And now probably if you go down the street, no one really knows that name anymore. But at one time, he was a major restaurateur here in Chicago.
Yeah, has the taste of pizza changed, say, the last 30 years? I mean, if we're going, you know, tavern to tavern, deep dish to deep dish, is it consistent or do you think it's changed? Is it different than you remember it?
That's a good question. I remember... Well, I think the quality has definitely changed to the upside. The pizzas that I remember from where I grew up were standard variety thin crust pizzas where the quality of the cheese that I remember was not very high quality. The crust was not really thoughtfully made. It was still very good, but it wasn't the type of pizza that true connoisseurs would be satisfied with now. So I just think... with social media and everyone sharing all this information, if you want to be very good, you just need to do a little bit of work on the web to find out who's doing what, and you can dial in the recipe. Whereas in the past, I just think it was harder because they didn't differentiate things nearly to the degree that we do now. So I'm sure the same phenomena occurs with deep dish too, but particularly on the thinner pizzas, you can really see that trend now too.
And then Peter, what's your final takeaway from our conversation today?
Well, I'm delighted that people care this much about pizza because I intend to do a book on the history of pizza in the United States. I guess the more the merrier, the more conversation that people care about the product and care about their brand. One thing I find a little curious when I talk to owners in particular, with some exceptions like Brian, is that you'd be surprised that people, one, don't know about their history. I'm talking about the actual owners of the pizzerias. And two, they don't really care that much about the history that much that I find, which is curious to me.
That's interesting.
It is, because you would think that the brand would really care about that because so much of this, you have choices now. Why not build up your brand with the history if you have it? And I feel that a lot of the business owners have undersold their history, that if they listened a little bit more and really honed in on that, they can really have a good story. And a lot of these things turn on the stories that they tell. Sometimes they tell stories that are just not true, not just because they're lazy. Well, primarily, I think because they're lazy. They don't really know the history because no one's really check the history. And when you really do the work, the history is far more intriguing than the myths are.
Yeah, I'm sure that they come up with a narrative and it's kind of almost a marketing, a way to market. And sometimes I kind of sense that some of those stories aren't true. and you've, Peter, it sounds like you've found out that some of them, they just kind of maybe just coming up with the narrative and sticking with it, and it might not even be historically accurate.
Right. A lot of the narratives that came through, especially on Deep Dish, were a reflection of who told the story. So it's more a reflection of not what actually happened, but what the person thinks credibly probably did happen. So you had all these stories about Chicago being the shoulders, being the city of big shoulders, and that's why we wanted a hearty pizza. Well, there may be some truth to that, but that's not how it began. And so you just get, if you don't have the facts because you didn't do the work on it, it tends to reflect who's telling the story, and that's a fatal flaw.
And then Brian, you know, talk about Bartoli and what's next, and kind of just wrap up our conversation today. I mean, first of all, people got to check the place out, and so you know, talk about your pizzeria and why people should come, and kind of what your future plans are as well.
Sure. Yeah, we have two locations, one in Westtown, one in Roscoe Village, both conveniently on the north side, and then on the basically the west side of Chicago, Westtown area of Chicago. So we're really easy to get to. And again, we stick true to the basics. My deep dish pizza is what I remember growing up in Chicago in the 70s. So we haven't changed and altered from that at all. So yes, we've added some ingredients to our ingredient list over the years. And same thing with our thin crust pizza. We're a true Chicago thin crust pizzeria. It's a cracker crust. People should definitely come check us out if you like Chicago style pizzerias, Chicago pizza. And if you're coming from a Cubs game, we're a great place to stop on the way back in Roscoe Village. And it's just good, solid Chicago pizzeria.
And, you know, you obviously appreciate the history as well, you know, and I appreciate you bringing Peter on with us. And then I guess the final question here, and I asked Peter this, is if there's a pizzeria in the past that you've never gotten a chance to eat at, what would that be if you were given that chance now?
Well, if I had a chance, I mean, I grew up in Park Ridge as well as Peter, believe it or not. And, we grew up on a pizza called JD Cat Pizza. It's no longer in business, and it was one of my favorite pizzas back in the day. So that would be the pizza I would go back to. I can't say there's other pizzas. I don't know what was around in there. Peter knows the history of it way before that, but that's the one I remember growing up. And that's the truth about pizza. Most people like what they remember growing up from wherever they're from. So if they had that particular style pizza, that's.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that regardless, people look back on the foods that they grew up with a degree of fondness, regardless of what they were, even if it was Campbell's soup and grilled cheese or something really, really good. Any last thoughts here, Brian, that you wanted to get across as well?
No, I think the main thing is that Chicago's a pizza city. We are. It's true. We've got so many different styles here, and you're going to find what you like in the city. A lot of people grew up in the suburbs and in other states where chain pizza was all they had. And when they come to Chicago, they realize what good pizza is.
Certainly happened to me when I moved to Chicago. All right, that's going to wrap things up. Big thanks to Brian Tondrick, founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizza in Chicago's Roscoe Village and Westtown neighborhoods. Also appreciate Chicago pizza historian Peter Regas for joining us today as well. All right, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesdays, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast powered by Odyssey.